This podcast is brought to you by Deepish Capital LLP. Deepish is authorised and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority. Please note that investments discussed are both illiquid and high risk and won't be suitable for all investors and should be considered as part of a diversified portfolio. The content of this podcast should not be construed as financial or taxation advice. We recommend investors seek appropriate professional financial advice. Any views expressed may no longer be current and may have already been acted upon. Welcome to this Deepish Discovery podcast. My name is Andrew Aldridge. The purpose of these podcasts is to bring to life the people and the companies behind what Deepish do. To that end, today I'm delighted to be joined by Oliver Wheatley and David Blake, who are Associate Investment Directors within the Tech Growth team here at Deepish Capital. So, Ollie, Dave, thank you very much for joining us. Great to see you.
Thanks for having us.
So, you've both recently joined Deepish. Depends when people are listening to this, of course. But can you just please tell us a bit about your background and your experience? Ollie, if I can start with you, perhaps.
Yeah, absolutely, Andrew. So, Ollie Wheatley from Yorkshire originally. So grew up in Leeds, went to
Yorkshire. We won't hold that against you.
Yeah, I'm one of the odd ones in the office that from the other side of the Pennine. So big Leeds fan. Went to York University, studied management and IT, and then moved across to Manchester to train as a chartered accountant with RSM.
Right.
Was quickly attracted by the shiny lights of corporate finance, and so moved into working, well, advising on mergers and acquisitions in the mid-market, so typically 10 to 100 million enterprise values, predominantly private equity backed businesses, and mainly across the tech world. Wanted to make that shift from, I guess, value realization into value creation, and so moved into direct investment role in the technology venture capital team at Development Bank of Wales, where I first joined up with David. And so spent a couple of years there investing in early stage businesses, anywhere from 100k seed capital up to 2-3 million participation in Series A rounds. And
kind of almost feeding then kind of what you're doing previously once you get to that kind of 10 to 100 million kind of M&A activity.
Absolutely, yeah. So, I mean, the businesses, when I was in the M&A world, it was time at KPMG, Clearwater Corporate Finance, a sort of boutique European investment bank, and Grant Thornton, and very much more mature businesses, sort of 2 million plus EBITDA, already have fully well-established processes, management teams, you know, well beyond kind of proving the, the MVPs, and
a million miles from kind of SEIS companies, and much more established than that.
Totally, but I mean, I guess, and part of the role that I was doing was very much it's a project management role where there's little value you can add, but the businesses are kind of there in terms of they're shaped, and they've been around funding rounds for several years, if not longer. So the value you bring in is really being able to execute that final realization. But we'll probably come on to it in a bit, but the opportunity to work with some of these earlier stage businesses who don't necessarily know what that future roadmap looks like, and having been there and seen what good looks like, I guess we can pass on some of those lessons.
And can get into that value creation stage. So Dave, what about yourself? Kind of where have you come from?
So like Ollie, I'm coming from a background in it, I guess, originally in accountancy, qualified accountant, but kind of came through the kind of industrial side rather than kind of KPMG public accountancy route via a number of blue chip companies. My background's kind of originally in defense, kind of moved over to medical devices, eventually ending up being kind of power generation.
Okay.
Where I'd kind of made a bit of an unusual decision as a kind of qualified accountant to kind of leave accountancy actually and pursue something that was a little bit more interesting. So I actually went back to university to study software engineering. Kind of picked up a bit of a bug through using kind of Excel and Visual Basic, and then started using Python and PHP kind of programming languages. And I could kind of see this technology called blockchain that is a bit of a thing at the moment. Kind of coming along, and I thought, you know, this is a really good opportunity to go away and understand how this technology could be used for supply chains in the kind of organizations that I'd been working with, actually. So I made that decision, went back to university, studied a master's in software engineering, kind of built out a kind of focus on blockchain technologies, kind of finished. And through the kind of networks I'd made there, I'd started working with a number of startups, technology yep. businesses. I was trying to pitch my own fintech at the time as well. And I ended up taking a call from Simon, who is obviously yep. our...
Simon Thirlwall-Jones, yeah.
Simon yep. Thirlwall-Jones, who's obviously our fund director here. And he said, look, we've got this opportunity. We think you'll be a really good fit for it, given your financial and technology kind of background. Yep. Why don't you come and join us at then it was the Development Bank of Wales, where I'd started working with Ollie.
Brilliant.
And from that point, I mean, I joined the seed team.
Yep.
So I was working with the kind of earlier stage companies, which was, you know, really quite exciting. And again, kind of technology agnostic.
Yep.
But, you know, a number of interesting companies that I'd got involved with, including kind of space tech through to AI, machine learning type cool. companies through to agri-tech systems. And that was really quite interesting, to, you know, and then getting involved with them as they were scaling up and doing the kind of follow on and building those really strong relationships yep. with these fast growing companies, you know, of which, you know, several of them were growing very, very rapidly yep. as well. And that really is actually one of the motivators for wanting to work in this industry, because yeah, yeah. you do get that kind of exposure to working with these types of companies.
And I guess you see that kind of immediacy, don't you? You make an impact. You see something happen, and it's not like it's not like a behemoth of a company where decisions yeah. get made and it takes months or years to see the interaction. This is real time.
And I try quite hard to kind of delve into the company as well and kind of feel like part of the team, or, you know, in the way where we have you know, a kind of constructive relationship where yep. we can challenge each other yep. and, you know, as you would expect from that kind of investor investee kind of relationship yep. but also, you know, kind of feeling that you're kind of on that journey with them as well and
yep.
and kind of batting for them when they go into, you know, certain interesting periods as well. So
yeah, brilliant. And I think that kind of fits in with kind of the DeepBridge ethos that, you know, we always talk about how we try to work proactively with our investee companies, and it is that working hand in glove with them is kind of exactly as you said, I guess. So hopefully that was an appealing factor about coming to DeepBridge again, kind of following on that kind of that relationship.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah
brilliant. So you kind of alluded to there, Dave, but I'll start with you on this one, is kind of just talking about venture capital and kind of, you know, what is so interesting about this sector and kind of why did you kind of go from, you know, your blue chips and your studies to kind of look at the world of venture capital?
Well, I guess when you get to the stage where you've got monthly management accounts and you're rolling kind of yep. closures and all the systems and stuff in place, and those kind of organizations work for a lot, you know, a lot of people, mm-hmm. but I've always found myself quite entrepreneurial, yep. entrepreneurial in spirit anyway, yep. you know, and certainly kind of aspirationally wanting to have my own tech company as yep. well. And, you know, having the opportunity to work with individuals who probably are the best at what they do in the world
yep.
and being on that really fast growth journey with them, you know, is that kind of perfect balance.
Yeah.
And as I mentioned earlier, that mix of those previous skills, actually, when I look back now, this actually feels like where you're supposed to, you know, where I'm supposed to be.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. All those elements are pulled together into one place. Yeah. Which is, it's fascinating. It's always amazing again, when you kind of, not just like yourselves, but when you hear from entrepreneurs about their kind of backgrounds and kind of how they ended up kind of doing a startup, etc. And it's fascinating to see the backgrounds and where people come from, because they come from all walks of life. Mm. But Ollie, kind of, so VC, you know, kind of, you made that kind of step down the food chain, if you like, into the kind of the value creation world. And, you know, I guess what was the motivation for that kind of, you touched on that before, but what was the motivation?
Yeah, well, I guess the excitement that comes with dealing with the earlier stage businesses yep. that you don't get when you are at that more predictable, sort of developed, well, advanced stage. But I mean, the job is, it's a job. It doesn't feel like a job sometimes. Yep. The opportunity to meet, like you've mentioned, some of just the most creative, entrepreneurial, inspirational yep. minds in the tech universe, both across the UK and globally.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's a pleasure to do that, and just every day being a school day, really. It's yep. As a new technology comes along, or, you know, it's something completely left field, but actually, you know, it's you then ask yourself, why has no one else done this before?
And it's like exposure to different sectors and different worlds, isn't it? Yeah, whether it's whether it's med tech to agritech to fintech, you know, it's entirely different kind of fields that you're looking at, I guess.
Totally, yeah. And I guess alongside that is the value creation piece, yep, in itself, both for the management teams and for the DeepBridge investors, yep, which being part of something where you've backed yourself and obviously through the process that we go through in assessing opportunities, we've picked something and we've supported it and been there through the various challenges that we make of them and through the strategic journey to ultimately creating something which is of value to everyone around the table. It's exciting to be a part of.
Just be careful you don't become like me before lockdown. It was when going to the pub was more of a regular thing. I was known as a bit of a pub bore because any subject that come up, I'd be like, oh, we've got a company that does something in that sector, or it'd be sports injuries. Oh yeah, I know something a bit about that, or it'd be something about agriculture. Oh, I know something about that. So just be careful you don't turn into me, guys. That's my only warning to you.
You'll just have to end up coming to the pub with us instead.
Oh, so yeah, we can be pub bores together. That's good. You talked about kind of finding the right companies, and again we touched on their across different sectors, but what do you look for in companies, what kind of in that kind of early stage company that we're looking, whether it be seed or the EIS funding, kind of what do you look for, what are the key qualities? Ollie, I'll start with you.
So again, people would be the starting point, so guys and girls who can demonstrate there's a reason why they should win in the sector that they're choosing to operate in, either from previous experience combined with the advisory board they might have established, and generally the direct experience in the same field, either in a bigger company and stepping down, deciding to do something similar, or directly from the academic world as well. Yeah. But also people who we believe we'll be able to work with and have a collaborative relationship for the good times and potentially bad times and be able to work our way through that. Second piece would be having a very robust and clear understanding of what the problems are that they're trying to solve, and ultimately a value proposition which is compelling and clearly addresses that need. So it would be management value proposition, I guess, the two key things.
And Dave, other than just saying I agree, kind of what other things do you look for?
I do agree. Yeah, that's good. I mean, absolutely, management. Fundamentally, one of the biggest drivers in the early stage VC decision making process. And I just to extend from what Ollie was saying, but having a balanced team of the right skills to be able to kind of execute on what a business plan says or what the technology development's going to be is really, really quite important. And I guess the additional piece that I think wasn't mentioned that I tend to look for is that there's significant technology, really tangible technology there, defendable, and also something that really makes them stand out from everybody else, which can be sometimes quite hard in the kind of software space to be able to demonstrate
it's
that.
True. But
slightly easier in the hardware space, I think.
There's a multitude of different areas we look at. I think there are probably the three main ones, wouldn't it be? Management, value proposition, and tech. And then the fourth, if we wanted to add one into the mix, would be the business plan corresponds to a market opportunity.
Yeah. And it's got that scalability, I guess, and that opportunity.
Yeah, and efficient scalability as well.
And I guess you probably see pitches or kind of things come to you where you probably look at it and go, do you know what, those numbers just are way off, or they're being overly ambitious. I guess that can be a red flag, I guess, to you occasionally. Is that fair, or is that kind of sometimes, is that just an entrepreneur enthusiasm that you've kind of got to just work with and dampen down a bit?
I mean, so I think that's a really interesting point, because I guess sometimes you can be presented with something that is almost too realistic.
Yep.
And I guess that can sometimes demonstrate almost a lack of ambition.
Yeah, yeah.
Almost.
It's so, that balancing act.
Yeah, I think the important thing is, how many decks do we see a year? Could be several hundred.
Could be several hundred,
right? So you get quite good at being able to understand the ones that are just saying what they think that they should be saying.
Yeah.
and those that are being genuine about what their opportunity is, and you know, looking at how that kind of business plan feeds into it,
yep.
that tends to give it away quite quickly.
And I guess the competitive landscape and what have you, you know, if they say they're going to take 10% market share off Apple in the first year, you probably know that's going to be slightly ambitious. But, you know, if it's a more kind of discreet kind of market, then potentially they can do that.
Yeah, and often that's the most frustrating thing. It could be an incredible business and the most amazing tech that someone's come up with, but it's the actual market opportunity isn't there to create a backable opportunity for us, but could still be a good potentially lifestyle business for
which unfortunately isn't right for us and investors, but could
for
be
themselves.
A, could work.
But one of the things we've worked quite hard to do, you know, between Simon, Ollie, and myself, you know, we've worked quite hard to kind of build a almost an investment thesis. What it is that we're looking for opportunities that we're going to invest in and work with, and you know, we work quite hard to stick towards that. I think that's pretty fair to say, isn't it?
Yeah. So you can kind of quantify it as well. And I guess on the people front as well, you know, I guess it's when you they've got to be great in their sector, etc., but I guess they've also got to be open to critical thinking, because you know, if you're on the board with them, they've got to be able to take challenge, they can't be defensive.
Well, radical candor.
Cool. So we're talking about kind of their kind of what we look for, etc., and you know, We do at DBridge, yeah, we work internationally, we've been across the world, etc. And the feedback we always get is that the UK is one of the best places in the world to start an early stage tech company. Well, if you're starting, of course, it's early stage, but you know what I mean. Obviously working in Wales specifically, but also across the UK, you know, what kind of ecosystems and support networks and things have you seen built up? I mean, Dave, kind of, you know, what support is out there for entrepreneurs and startups and scale-ups?
I mean, funnily enough, we were talking about this earlier, and no, I think now is probably the best time ever to have been starting a tech company from, you know, what support is available kind of aspect. I mean, some people might look at the kind of economic situation and question that, but certainly from us, what's available to support you, this no time like the present, there's more support now than there probably ever has been. You know, if we look across the entire ecosystem, there's incubators available, universities, spin outs, support for the spin outs for the universities. There's probably more funding available than, or more sources of funding available than there have been. Very good kind of Innovate UK, Smart Cymru in Wales type support as well.
I guess you've got that regional funding and structures as well, haven't you? Whether it be Development Bank in Wales or Smart Cymru or, you know, Scottish Investment Bank or enterprises like Catalyst, NI, Northern Ireland, and things, you've got those regional kind of support as well as kind of national initiatives like British Business Bank and Innovate UK and things like that.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I was going to say British Business Bank is probably a big driver in this as well. So.
Yeah. Ollie, kind of any kind of other kind of things that's out there, which is.
I think just to echo what David said, now being such a good, you know, great opportunity for investees to launch. I mean, if anything, it's the problem facing them is which ones to back and which ones to go into. So there's incubator. I mean, in Manchester alone, there's three or four different ones that you could choose. But I think maybe the last couple of years seen a bit of a shift from it being public sector driven initiatives through the private sector's actually taking ownership and seeing.
Good.
Especially across angel groups, both regional, you know, within cities and just general sector specific ones, which not only bring the seed funding, which everyone needs, but it's also the expertise that they can bring from the
yeah, absolutely. And also kind of very specific ones. So, you know, kind of female led angels groups, etc., support female entrepreneurs, you know, like things like Fund to North in Manchester and things. And yeah, it's there seems to be more things going. I couldn't agree more with you that there's probably never been a better time. Except for the current economic climate, but you know, that's I think the ecosystem, the structure's there. It's about it's about the timing.
And I think, you know, less, I'd say tangibly, but there's just so much information available now as well. Like if you can probably go away and find any other VC's opinion on you know, what it is that needs to be included in a deck, for example. Whereas I think, you know, several years ago, this might have been a bit more of a mystery for some people. You can just
it's true, but no, I guess also, I know, kind of almost subliminally, but things like Dragon's Den and things like that have brought kind of entrepreneurship to a mainstream audience, and maybe over the last 10, 20 years made it more kind of acceptable, or kind of more kind of goal driven for people, more of an objective for them.
Yeah, I think Dragon's Den probably scares founders more than
yeah, we're not all like them. We're not all dragons. Yeah,
mostly, it's not mostly like that.
Yeah, absolutely. And obviously, starting a business is tough. It's it's a tough world out there. It's an honest world out there. It's things bite you and things. So, but what are the kind of common challenges that you're seeing within the kind of the companies that you work with, and more generically? So, Ollie,
sure. I think recruitment would probably be the number one issue they're facing. For us, obviously, key tech hires, which is challenging.
Yep.
Although might be more opportunities for that market pool increasing as there continues to be layoffs from some of the bigger participants, and sales personnel as well, who are able to make that shift from the big company to the small company world, and be aligned in terms of being in the trenches with the startup and what being part of a startup truly entails. So tech and salespeople, but getting the right.
And I mean, just adding to the kind of resource piece as well, I think certainly in the early stage, like adding staff to the company is probably an area of great anxiety for founders as well, because finding the right people.
And giving up control to a degree.
And giving up control. Both that and, is this person the right person?
Yeah.
And then managing it, if it's not, like the resourcing bit can be very difficult.
And again, as you allude to there, Ollie, you might think you've brought the right person in, et cetera. Yeah, they might have done brilliantly. It's a blue chip, et cetera. But the mindset is very different when you're in a startup. You are the one that, you might be the CEO of a startup, but you're the one putting the tea bags in the tea caddy. You're the one making sure that the office is clean. You're the one, all those kind of very basic things that, when you're in a blue chip, you don't worry about, but you had to roll up your sleeves.
I mean, this is, obviously, this has been an area of debate quite recently with, I guess, Elon Musk taking over Twitter and him calling everybody in and saying, are you prepared to work hardcore? Yep. Are you gonna put in the hours that it takes in order to, build a, essentially reverting Twitter back to that kind of startup mentality? Yep. And, I think it can be quite difficult for people to adjust to that.
And
one of the advantages startups have is their ability to move quickly and dynamically and pivot, but that probably does involve working more than 35, 40 hours a week. And I think one of the things we're keen on as a team is to be able to work in the same kind of manner as the companies that we're investing in, the expectations that we're expecting them to work quite hard, and vice versa. I think they should expect us to work equally as hard and as fast for them as we do expect them to run their businesses.
It was interesting. Last year, in 2022, we had a Deepage X conference in London, and we had a number of our investee companies on a panel. Mm-hmm. And one of the questions the audience to one of the CEOs was, you've got three investors on your cap table. You talked about Deepage being the first one you always go to for advice, and why is that? Mm-hmm. And he said, I know that I'll get a response. He said, I know that if I text Savas or Ben at 11 o'clock at night, I'll get a response. It might not be straight away, but probably by 8 o'clock next morning, they'll have come back to me, etc. Yeah. He said, it's that interaction and that kind of that they're on my side and working as hard as me kind of gives me that reassurance, which I guess is critical, because it can be quite lonely when you're an entrepreneur, I guess, if you've got all that pressure on your shoulder.
Communication everywhere is key to us. I mean, not just with investee companies, but with prospects. When we do receive decks, we turn them around at ASAP, don't we, as soon as we can, be it positive or negative.
A quick no for some companies can be as good as a quick yes. I mean, it means that they can focus on where they need to be.
But I think we work quite hard on kind of building those relationships with the companies as well. I mean, we're not really the kind of team that wants to just put money in and just sit off and just leave them. There is an element of just wanting to, be able to understand what's going on in the company and provide help where we can, and
meaningful help as well. That's appropriate. Absolutely. So obviously, the kind of generic kind of challenges, but I guess it'd be remiss of us not to kind of talk about the current economic climate. You know, for people listening to this later, you know, this is early 2023. We're talking, you know, that there are the challenges macro level and across the border in the UK and globally at the moment. And you know, kind of what pressures is that putting on early stage companies? Dave, kind of start with you.
I think it is putting a lot of pressure from kind of a number of aspects, really. So. At this current stage, I would say staff might be, or potential recruits might be less likely to leave their comfortable corporate jobs to want to join startups, where I think it's perceived that the landscape is a lot riskier at the moment.
Sure.
You know, a lot of the narrative is that kind of venture capital markets have kind of cooled down in the last year or two, or the last 12 months or so, really. And that's putting a lot of pressure also on funding rounds as well, which is probably making it harder. Although I kind of think that there is a lot of dry powder out there, and there's just been a bit of a reset, really, as far as valuations are concerned. So I think there's deals to be made as long as the valuations are correct to support those.
And that's makes sense.
Probably down from the lofty highs of 40, 60x revenue as it would have been kind of 12 months ago to something more reasonable.
And I guess that depends on the sector as well. You know, a med tech will probably be different to a SaaS product or things like that.
It also depends on how quick the company's growing well. If you're growing at a T2, D3 kind of rate, it's going to be a lot easier for you to raise funds at a valuation that you want as opposed to one that is led
dictated
by...
dictated to you.
I mean, the entire market is supply and demand.
Of course it is.
You know, and it's interesting because... I think like a lot of the time we can have kind of conversations with founders around kind of valuation and kind of setting expectations around that. And I think sometimes it can feel from their perspective quite personal. But really, like I said, it's a market demand thing. If there's lots of investors trying to get into your company, you're probably more likely to be able to support a higher valuation than if there's fewer. So it's
I guess from our perspective, what you don't want to do is effectively swamp the company and lose their motivation. You know, you want to make sure they're suitably in it as well. So as a founder,
absolutely. Yeah. And you know, and one of the things I think that companies don't really do so well is think about it as an entire journey. And I once had it described as it's like getting on a bus and kind of understanding where everyone's kind of going on that bus together and understanding how many different rounds of funding you're expecting. And I think it can be quite easy to kind of get into the routine of raising cash, running out of cash, raising cash again, running out of cash. Whereas, you know, kind of building in that, well, you know, we're going to try to raise at this amount, be kind of generous, understand that there's going to be 20 to 30% dilution on a round probably, but making sure that the company's got enough funding to keep it going rather than being in a position where, you know, you want to set a valuation and only take 5% dilution, and you know, we'll have a really high valuation now, but then make it really difficult for anyone to invest in the future.
So. Absolutely, you know, I saw one relatively recently. It was a great pitch, great company. They knew they need to raise about £7 million over probably five tranches during the course. But when you looked at it, it was actually the valuation at this point was unrealistic. So it was great that they'd thought it through. Ultimately, you know, by the time they got to that kind of last tranche, it all made perfect sense. But it was just too early in terms of going too high too early. But that's all part of the education process, I guess. And
But certainly believe that founders should be retaining a kind of meaningful chunk of the company as they're going through, because we want them to be incentivized to go on to...
Yeah, yeah, it's their baby as well.
Yeah, you know, exactly,
Ollie, anything to kind of to add to that on the challenges?
I guess just the general uncertainty and that creates delayed decision-making across the piece. So especially when you think about we've got an investee that's looking to win a new customer and it's a new technology and they've not experienced it before.
Yep.
That decision-making process is just getting delayed and delayed, and there's a lot more, I guess, upfront trial work, and which there always is, but everything just takes longer. Yeah. So that would be one of the key ones, and then just the continued increase in across the whole overhead base and the challenges that presents our founders with in terms of both staff retention and you know, the attraction of, like David said, conversely to whilst they might not be able to attract some of the talent into the startup culture, Similarly, the attraction of that more, you know, the stability and potentially the pay rises that they've seen at some of the larger operators, and then customer attention as well. When the market's as it is,
uncertainty and I guess, you know, from your perspective, I guess kind of understanding where the kind of cash burn of companies is. You know, it's if it's a software developer, you know, you've probably got a laptop and that's probably about it that, you know, is electricity costs. But, you know, if you've got a company that is, I know, using a load of electricity, then that's going to have a, you know, recent kind of events will have much more of a direct impact. And I guess just kind of understanding that. And brilliant. So you've been with Deepbridge a little while now, which is great. I know you're still getting to know the companies, etc. But kind of, I guess first impressions, you know, and try not to swear, try not to be rude. But you know, what are your first impressions of the portfolio that you've kind of inherited, Ollie? I'll start with you on that. I guess, you know,
I guess the people first of all. Again, like a bit of a repeating record here about people. But incredible minds that we've got, and real thought leaders in their chosen fields, combined with the breadth of technology that we are open-minded to considering here at Deepbridge, from, you know, some of the vanilla B2B SaaS companies to the metaverse and you know, contact lenses and hard tech, just the whole array. If it's the right investment thesis, the business has the right opportunities and everything else stacks up, then we're open to it.
Which I guess kind of, again, yeah, we're talking about economic challenges and things, I guess, you know, that's gives investors some diversification. You know, if you're you're not all in one area which could be adversely affected or whatever, you broadly distributed. Yeah.
Absolutely. And I think the other thing for would be you look at, obviously we've got very early stage investments and somewhere we've been in for a number of years, and there is a real tangible opportunity for a good two or three of them to be £100 million plus businesses within the next couple of years. And it's an exciting time to join for sure. Yeah,
brilliant. And Dave, kind of first impressions?
I mean, the breadth and depth of the technologies that the companies that are, you know, certainly the ones that I'm looking after is just amazing. And, you know, from that kind of diversity perspective, you know, on one hand we've got propulsions and rocket propulsion and AI kind of companies going all the way through to kind of quantum computing. It's broad, and like Ollie said, the opportunity there is absolutely huge.
And
it's really quite exciting. And again, a number of these companies are very much the thought leaders in the space. And that really is quite motivating to be involved with.
It's great. It's exciting, isn't it? It's great to meet those guys. And absolutely. So I guess kind of what are your ambitions for 2023? Kind of we're in January now. Kind of what's the future like, Dave?
I've got a 1-year-old in the house, so I'd quite like a full night's sleep.
That'd be my
personal goal for 2023.
I mean, good luck with that. But yeah, that's
it's nice to have aspirational goals. I guess.
Absolutely.
But I think more kind of work related, very much around growing and maturing the portfolio, really kind of getting into the companies and really kind of building those relationships with them, and hopefully being able to realize a number of returns for some of them. This year, hopefully.
I know you guys are working hard with a number of companies on exit opportunities, which would be great, and is exactly what our listeners want to hear, which is great. Ollie, what about yourself for 2023?
I think it's developing the relationships with the companies that we've inherited, being able to hopefully continue that reputation that Deepbridge have of actually being the ones to go to if you've got the questions, and but more than that, actually being proactive with that, and so really fostering deep relationships with the existing portfolio, at least a couple of partial exits, if not full, would be fantastic, and then hopefully bringing in another couple of exciting new businesses to the fold as well.
We're looking forward to new companies coming in that you guys are now kind of identifying and selecting. That's gonna be exciting as well. So,
and there are some really exciting ones coming through as well. So
Is that kind of cross sectors? Is that kind of across the board? Is that
I think that's fair to say. Yeah,
brilliant. Good. Okay, one of the purposes of these podcasts is for our contacts, our clients, etc., just to get to know the people behind DeepBridge and kind of what we do, etc. So, Dave, starting with you, kind of what do you get up to away from work? What are your personal interests?
So, I might not look like it, but I'm actually a big heavy metal fan.
Okay,
so,
nice.
So nice. Getting out to gigs is...
And for those listening, not watching, he hasn't got a mullet, so that's...
I did have just before I had the haircut ready for the podcast.
His fade is getting higher and higher, though, so it will be a mohawk before.
Did I mention I've got a 1-year-old in the house? Yeah, the grey hair is getting more. So, yeah. But you know, one of the things I quite like to do, it's kind of that engineering problem solving type piece. So I spend a lot of my free time kind of writing in Python, which is probably my favorite coding language. So when I do get a bit of time, I tend to be trying to do something with that, really. So.
Okay, cool. Good. And Ollie, what about yourself?
I'm a massive F1 fan. Okay. So, yeah, mainly from the sofa, but try and get to the odd race nearby. Bit Silverstone or near European shores. And other than that, so recently married. So, enjoy.
So your hair will be going grey soon as well.
I guess. Although, yeah, as a ginger guy, I'm actually looking forward to that. Some of the ribbon away.
Fair enough.
And then, to work little working cocker spaniel. So outdoors, enjoying nature, keeping fit, all the usual stuff. I guess when you've got time to fit it in around the day job.
Absolutely. Yeah. So okay, brilliant. So the question we ask all of our guests on the podcast is I'll be honest, it's my favorite bit of the podcast. It's the most insightful bit.
I was stressing the most.
Absolutely. Everyone does. And everyone comes in, and usually if they dial in via Zoom or they come in, they always go, oh, this has been the hardest bit. Everything else I can answer, but this is so here we go. So if you could invite three guests, dead or alive, but not friends or family, because we don't upset anybody, to the DeepBridge dinner party, who would they be and why? Ollie, I'll start with you.
Okay.
We'll make Dave sweat a little bit longer.
Dave actually told me this before, so I might just
just pinch them all now.
I'll start with Steve Jobs. I think it is a bit of an obvious one, but I think just the journey he went on at Apple for one would be, just to hear it firsthand would be amazing. Mm-hmm. And I think one of his strongest skills was being able to prioritize, especially around the plethora of different innovation routes he could have gone down, and how he did that. It's similar to how we make investment decisions. It's how did he back so many winners?
And it's also is how he faced challenges was particularly. I think people get lost with that sometimes. They just think Apple was a success story and it was just a straight line. And
the resilience he showed.
I presumed it was on the basis that you can't cook and all you'd have to serve him was fruit.
Second on the list, so ties into the F1 piece, but I guess a little bit of lessons could be learned as well. So Toto Wolff, Mercedes-Benz, and being able to deliver 8 constructor championships in a row.
Consistency.
How did he set about motivating his team to come in year after year to win, want to improve?
It was interesting recently, actually, because obviously they had their least successful year for a long time in 2022. And I can't remember whether it was Toto or somebody else on the team actually said that at the last race of the season, they said there's more motivation now than ever before. Yeah. So when you're not doing well, I guess it's quite easy to motivate yourself to do better. And it's just kind of maintaining that performance. It's interesting.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And then I'm sure there'd be some interesting side stories about
absolutely. The
true relationships and what was really said between him and
absolutely.
The Red Bull boys.
Absolutely, yeah.
And then last, just to lighten the mood, would be Will Ferrell. He plays the exact same role pretty much, doesn't he, in every movie, but he's one of the few actors who can just crack me up every time.
I'm sure he'd have a good few stories as well. Brilliant. Interesting mix. Dave, what about yourself?
Well, so I guess following along from the Steve Jobs, I was actually going to say Steve Wozniak. For an ability to productize some of the pretty largest products ever created. Would be absolutely fascinating to hear how he kind of went about that and kind of managing it. Secondly,
I actually went to a speech by Steve Wozniak.
And did
it was,
you?
It was fascinating. Yeah, it was really interesting. And it was interesting because he was talking about working in a very commercial entity.
Yeah.
How to drive that science within a commercial entity. Yeah, and that's quite a natural, quite an unusual skill to actually be able to do that.
Yeah, I mean, it can be quite hard. It can be quite hard for companies to maintain that focus on innovation and that R&D piece.
Yeah.
Especially when there's kind of financial targets that need to be made and you're constantly under pressure to commercialize rather than innovate.
Absolutely.
So that's quite interesting. Secondly would be David Attenborough.
Okay.
I mean, God, the guy's a national treasure, isn't he? And, you know, what Sunday evenings when we're putting on an Attenborough show and watching it with the boys and,
and your children, not the
not the football team. My children.
Yeah.
And we're kind of settling in, and we're watching it, and you know, a lot of the environmental stuff that he's doing just kind of reminds you of some of the really big problems that are kind of going on in the world that need solving, and it always makes me feel quite proud to work in an industry where, you know, we have the ability to support companies who will be able to solve some of these problems as well, which is just. I find that just truly amazing. And
I spoke to somebody recently who actually said one of the amazing things, actually, when you think about it, when you watch these shows, is yes, you look at the problems, etc. But actually, if you think about how we've, in the last 50 years, discovered some of these problems, if that makes sense. So actually, the science that's led to these discoveries of what's going wrong is fascinating in itself. And now we've got to find the science to actually rectify it. So
And you know, a lot of these kind of programs as well kind of lead consumer behavior as well. If you think about kind of microplastics and plastics, and then all the kind of spin-off businesses that are set up, you know, to solve these problems on the back of those movements, you know, it really does have a big impact on the world. So. Yeah, I thought it'd probably be quite interesting.
Absolutely.
And then thirdly, I'd say to lighten the mood, but I guess it gives you a bit of a focus on what I like to watch. But it's a guy called John Oliver.
Okay, yeah.
But he presents a TV show called Last Week Tonight by John Oliver. He also does the voice of Izazu in the...
It's the cabbage guys.
Yeah, it's the cabbage guy. Cabbage. Yeah. John Oliver married a cabbage. He did a really interesting piece on AI. And how it interprets certain things. It was generative AI talking about John Oliver doing different things, and one of them was marrying a cabbage. So you can watch that if you want.
I've seen that. That's good. Yeah, that'd be good fun. Good. And I think that'd be a very interesting dinner party. I think that would be good. I think Will Ferrell probably style the show. I think he'd just be clowning around. But anyway, that's good.
With his jazz flute.
Absolutely. Yeah, indeed. Excellent, gents. Well, thank you very much for your time. Really appreciate that. And we'll hopefully catch up with you again later in the year and chew the cud over other things. So yeah, it's great to catch up with you. Thank you, gents.
Thanks, Andrew.
Thank you for joining us. If you have any topics you'd like covered in future podcasts, then please email us at discovery@deepridgecapital.com. This podcast was brought to you by Deepridge Capital LLP. Deepridge is authorised and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority. Please note that investments discussed are both illiquid and high risk and won't be suitable for all investors and should be considered as part of a diversified portfolio. The content of this podcast should not be construed as financial or taxation advice. We recommend investors seek appropriate professional financial advice. Any views expressed may no longer be current and may have already been acted upon.